Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mr. Dinkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sabadini.
Here.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Discussion items, I'll turn it over to Councilor Nashaw for the discussion.
All right. So the first thing we have is the TransDev contract. And so I handed out a document to you that shows, if you go to the very back of the contract, it shows on September 8th of 2023, so 2 years ago, end of the contract with TransDev. And so this is the most recent pricing that we have. And then you'll see that the following year, we're still trying to put a contract together with TransDev. At that time, we removed the parts cost from the contract. And so the total cost last year for the 24-25 year was $483,975. And that was, and so, for that year, that was that amount of money. There was, we used the 23 number, so there's no increase onto it and in that year. What we did then is we've been trying to get the contract put together. What you have in front of you is a boilerplate contract that TransDev has used before, but they didn't. It's not been like with school. So they're trying to use a contract that meets the requirements that we looked at. And all we were really looking for was one where from this page right here, this is the key page, it's on the second last page of your packet, that really breaks down to we get 8 hours of service a day from the general manager, the techs, how many techs, and their cost. Down below are our notes for salary and benefits, total cost, overhead, how much that is for that first year, and the administrative cost of 12%. And that's it. Also showing there the cost for the hourly for overtime rates, should they be needed. Contract prior to the contract was, TransDev contract was, when they put the contract together, they evaluated our fleet, and then there was a lot of parameters put in there. And so if the, you know, some years on the parts, they would make out because maybe they didn't have to do $112,000, $127,000 of work. Other years, we would make out, but it was built in. And so we said, all right, we just want a true cost of the work. And so what they brought back is their labor cost onto this contract, and so it's very much similar to what we would have seen with our Mets contract. And in doing so, we get billed directly each month for parts. And so, again, the parts will vary month to month based on, you know, because of the age of our fleet. And then the cool part, though, is this. If we do any work, like for SMCC, and Karen will talk about that, is then we have a reduction because in the past, all we would receive is a $5 per hour reduction in the bill. Now, and going in this model, we see all of that money come back. So like in July, for that work, $6,800 less cost, okay? But the other part that got built that was in this contract, I'm going to have Karen speak about it, is what are you calling that before?
Non-contract.
So I want her to take a moment and talk about that, and then answer. And then she's just going to start answering questions for you guys, okay? Because Karen has been with TransDev for a long time. She's going to go over that. And then also talk about salaries of our people and why these numbers look the way they look and all that. So I'm going to slide up here.
Maybe. Okay.
Like Amy said, I've been with Transdev, started with Monroe Public Schools on August 1st of 1996, and I was the only original employee, or the only employee that they had on that day. We had, like, traveling techs and stuff that came in, so I have been with the company and Monroe Public Schools for 29 years. So I've seen a lot of different contract changes, kind of figured out what works for us, what works for you guys. I always tell my boss I feel more like I work for Monroe Public Schools than I do Transdev, because you guys are my team. So I went to Monroe Public Schools. I raised my kids in Monroe. We are all about Monroe. When it comes to our outside contracts, we do ISD, St. Mary's, Head Start. We do the Youth Opportunity Program vehicles. Monroe Public Schools gets a $5, the letter of understanding that you were talking about earlier. Is Monroe has always got $5 an hour for, like, use of facility for every hour that we work on our additional work contracts, is what they're called. Monroe is still going to get that $5 an hour for use of facility. But on top of that, we're billing you only the hours that we work. Like before in our contract, it had, you know, we're going to base our labor on this many hours. Now you're only, you know, and it could be less or more depending on. You know, we never knew how many hours we were going to work during our inspections or whatever. Now you guys are only being billed for what we actually work on Monroe Public School vehicles. So I actually ran some numbers last year for the 24-25 year contract year. We billed ISD, Head Start, St. Mary's combo, $95,000 in labor. You guys are going to get a credit for all of those hours. I mean, you know, if you don't like what the labor looks like on that form, I can't guarantee it's going to be $95,000 this year. It just depends how many hours we work on their vehicles. But all that's going to be credited back to Monroe Public Schools.
Is it originally billed out and then back?
We bill it to work orders, and then there's a report at the end of the month.
So it doesn't actually go into our...
We just billed it for the first time where I set up what an invoice will look like. And that's for the $6,800. I just put additional work. We worked 102 hours on additional work contracts. And it goes, like, I bill you the labor, and then I show the next line item
where it comes off.
So
it's $5.
No. What is our thing, $60?
It's right here.
$7.
So we charge.
So for a regular hour for a technician, it is $66.91. Then I deduct that entire $66.91 for every hour that we work on ISD or an outside contract.
And the $5 more, so it'd be $66, is because of them using our facility.
So that's on
gas.
And if I can.
Yes.
So before now, what we're talking about, we wouldn't get any credit for those hours. We would just get the $5, and then we had the flat monthly installment based on work day is what we were billed for, regardless of if they were working on our vehicles or other people's vehicles, and then they would bill out for their time spent their people's vehicles, but we wouldn't get credit on that on our invoice based on the previous contract. How would push that?
Before it was the $5, now it's the full amount.
Plus, still the $5.
$71. Yes. You look at that $607,000. Number right here on year one.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that if those numbers hold for the ISD and St. Mary's, you know, roughly $100,000, that brings that down to $500,000. So, and then in the past, we would also have the
Ask a question about the. So you said last year was $95,000. Do you have a 5-year? Like running total is 95,000 consistent over 5 years or was 1 year?
I would say it probably is pretty consistent. I only ran the numbers for last year. We did ISD years ago, and then they sent back out and went with somebody else for a few years, and then they came back to us. So So we just started doing ISD like 3 years, man, I think 3 years ago now. So I could do 3 years of numbers if it was needed, but I'd say it's pretty consistent.
Yeah, as long as, I mean, I didn't know if there was a spike or...
It should be about 10% of the total listing. 6%. 6%, I'm sorry.
I actually broke it down to, like, our last contract cost on that, the first sheet you had out was the 582. And then once you mentioned we took the parts out, I didn't break it down that far. But also, we used to charge you guys non-contract. So if there was accidents, rust, you know, anything like that, anybody's getting those, you know, what we did for that. But there's no more non-contract. So our non-contract let for the 2024-25 school year, we billed on top of our regular contract cost over $75,000. Now that's built into the contract, so there's no more non-contract.
But it's
so that total would have been $658,000.
That was prior. Okay.
Prior to
July 1.
Yes. Okay. So that total was $658,000 plus. The new contract cost is only $607,000. So if you add the non-contract into it, you guys are actually saving with the new proposed contract over $50,000.
So that's all now included.
Correct.
Because what it is now is simply this. We have 24 hours of tech service. Okay. And how those texts get used is our stuff, whatever needs to be done to a bus, okay? They take care of it. And then we bring in the ISD or SMCC, those buses, those hours right there, they fix it, and we get credited for their time. So in essence, it is here where there's nothing, kind of like we talked about before, where you look at math, and that's how we do it with our transportation side. You work these hours, so we brought this down so that the last part that they do, and this is why it's important for us to stay with a company like First Vehicle or TransDev. I know it's multiple names.
I still say First Vehicle sometimes.
I know. Is this? It's the ability that she has to go out and get parts for us. That's the biggest difference. The parts that we get. And the cost of getting it locally, the cost of dealing with getting oil locally, to even disposal. I mean, that's part of it. When you look in here of what they have to attend to, it's something that they have to attend to. So
TransDev is a worldwide company. Our corporate, our the people of TransDev that owns us, our technical corporate, I guess, is in France. So we are worldwide. We have locations in, I don't know, 30 states. So we have a lot of buying. I mean, just for an example, if you go to Napa locally and buy a filter and it's $27, I'm probably paying for it.
Aren't you the biggest in the nation?
Yes. So, I mean, our buying power, and we're like, we charge our additional work contracts, like ISD and St. Mary's and those, 20 to 25% parts markup. We're not charging Monroe Public Schools anything. But for so many years, we like to, you know, keep them, you know, we like to give. You know, credit where credit is due, I guess, is an easy way to say it, but it's you guys are getting all your parts at cost. So if Monroe Public Schools was to, say, pull it back in-house and try to, you guys would, you know, your parts cost would be a lot more than we're paying. So we're passing our savings on to you guys.
So SMCC, they have their part?
We mark St. Mary's up 20% and ISD 25%. I will tell you that their labor rate is more than the labor rate we're charging you.
So I know this contract took a hot minute to get to you. We really asked Jason to get creative. And when I say creative, it was looking at it from a different lens than they've had to look at contracts in the past. And so that's when they came back with, really, honestly, at the end of the day, it's a legalese contract. Really simple is that we're the purchaser, they're the provider, and the contractor, and you saw a whole bunch of stuff about insurance in there with the permit, and that we pay our bills. It's pretty generic in that manner. Want to make sure that we answer questions. We did have one typo that will get fixed. North Macomb is not M-A-C-O-M-E, so that means that would be in there. So That was, that got caught by somebody. And so I appreciated that there. So with that, though, I'd like to, we want to answer any other questions on this. Again, she's been doing this for years. The interesting thing is Jason, who is directly above you? Or
yeah, he's our region vice president.
He was also with them.
He started out, my region vice president, did my job in 1996. I started out as the office manager, and he was the general manager. And he moved out of state, took a promotion, and I don't know, 15 years later became my boss again. We stayed in contact all those 15 years, which was great.
Right.
Comes around,
that works.
Around, so.
Technician turnover. You've been there a long time, so I would assume you would know. Do you have much turnover?
We do not have a huge turnover. My lead tech that retired in 2019 had been with us for over like 22 years before he retired. The lead tech that I have now, actually in January, will be there 25 years. Like our lower paying jobs per se, like the preventative maintenance tech or whatever, we train those people and then they of course would leave. We'd certify them and they would leave because, you know, we didn't have a huge turnover, so there was nowhere to climb the ladder. The two guys that I have underneath my lead now have been there almost 5 years. They are looking to hire another one.
They're all certified.
Yep.
Which is
good. My lead tech is master certified in auto, truck, and school bus.
So the one difference is, on this contract part, the other one is when we hit a point where there's overtime, for example, he put negative. Should something happen to a school bus late in the afternoon and we need to send a tech out to address it, then you get billed for overtime, okay? Where the past contract is baked in. But that's where, again, having Karen and her experience, really looking at the lens of I'm an MPS person, that's where she has control of trying to make so we don't need to pay overtime.
The only time we have a lot of overtime is we go through state inspections once a year, and we get a 1 to 24-hour notice. So, I mean, he could call me right now and say, Karen, I'm going to be there at 9 a.m., and Karen's going to be there at 9 a.m. And that usually lasts about a month. They do like a 218-point inspection on every bus. We go through every bus. When we service them, we see them once every 4 months unless they write them up. You know, we go completely through them, and if we went through it in January, and he comes in April, we might not have seen it again in that whole time. So we do what we call pre-inspects, completely go through them all, fix whatever. I mean, you could have, so if there's a tear in a seat that's more than 3 inches, that's red tagging that bus is down.
So you said this would be an additional cost. You know, and before, like you said, it was part of the contract, and now it's separated out. So what do we anticipate that a month of that would
time for inspections?
Yeah.
We're probably talking, 2 hours a day, so per person?
For the state inspections, they're all day.
I mean, they can work anywhere. It just depends on what point we are in the inspections and how well the drivers have written up their buses.
Only because it's going to be an additional cost. I mean,
yes.
You know, I know what inspections are like.
Yeah.
They can be quite labor intensive.
I mean, I'll be honest, there's days that we don't work overtime during, but there could be days that my guys are working 14-hour days.
Right.
I mean, we just don't know until we get to that point because...
So why was that separated out this time?
It's not separated out. The overtime would be additional.
It'll be additional.
The additional cost.
So when we...
Whereas before, the inspections were included.
Well, the total cost of their contract was even for any overtime it would have to happen.
But if we built into the contract, I'm just going to use it, say we had 50 hours of overtime, and if we only did 40 hours of overtime during inspections, then the girl paid for the 50 regardless whether he did it or not. Now you're only paying for the labor that we actually do.
And talk a little bit about why there would be overtime. I've got to assume during that time that overtime if the inspector wants to stay longer. There's also overtime if you know he's coming back the next day.
We have to have at least 8 buses ready for him the next day.
Anybody that's done inspections understands exactly.
And I mean, if they have, you know, 6 trips out, Yeah. And we kind of got to finagle around to make sure, that, okay, these are the eight buses that I need for tomorrow. We stay till we have them ready.
Right.
Several years ago, we would be there at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Now we're there till about eight. Yeah.
So why is this one slated for a 3-year contract? I believe every other contract was for a year. Why is this one?
It's the additional.
This one, really because it's...
So they came up last year, and they came up in 23.
Yeah, so this one, well...
23, 24.
Yeah, no, so if we go back in history, in 23, we put it out to bid, and so since that spring of actually... Yeah, spring of 23, we've been trying to get this all settled. So that's always just 1 year.
Yeah, we just did it like an additional add-on year.
An additional, just to, because we could not get to an agreement on a formal contract.
So what happens over the 3 years? Is there a projected increase at any time?
So it's right here. It's already put together.
It's about 3.5%. And we used to always go by CPI, and I will say the last time I looked at CPI, it was over 6%. And we're only adding 3.
When you run the numbers on here, what did you come up with for the percentage from last year?
Well, yes. Just if you look at the raw numbers, it's 25%, but that doesn't include
the non-contract.
The non-contract.
You're not.
Reductions plus the... Yeah, non-contract and the outside work.
Yes. So we add in those two items right there, you're talking about $140,000 roughly. We would see off of that $600,000.
Brings it down to about the same.
September 23, our spend was $484,000 roughly. And so if you look at that number, and you're right, that it's almost exactly the same as it was back in the 23 school year.
And in that, so in those numbers that are in there, we're keeping the environmental charge, take care of all the environmental stuff, our FMIS system, which is our work orders, our POs, we track the history of every vehicle, retired or in service.
So what's written in the contract if we want to open it up next year? Is there anything that allows for a review of this prior to a 3-year, or is it set in stone for a 3-year?
So one of the things that we had in the prior contract, we had a lot of, it was really the RFP. They put the RFP and then they created it into the contract. What is the only thing that NSDEV is doing here in this contract is whatever we guide them to do. And so anything that, and Karen actually asked me that today, she goes, how trailer, and we have to work on another, working on one today. I said, hopefully it's not that often, but when we need to have this work done, you know, we're going to here. But we also have to keep in mind that their number one job is to keep our buses on the road. Okay. So this contract, as far as there is language in here, I'm going to take me a hot minute.
These always go through your contracts now. I mean, that kind of became a new thing that Monroe Public Schools started doing, and it seems like a trend that we're going.
No, this is all this is it's a financial 3-year contract.
Yeah, that would be terminating it, but if you wanted to open it up, say, like right now, if you do it for a year, if there's anything in it you want to review, any numbers, any costs, anything, you have the opportunity to do that because you're renewing it each year. Right, and so this means it's a lock, solid close for 3 years.
We've always had our past contracts, so there was, and I'll be honest, I haven't read completely.
This one's just a...
But I mean, like, if you guys said, oh, you know, suddenly I went out of this contract, the old contract read,
it wouldn't
as long
be
as you
getting
get 60-day
out.
Notice or...
Yeah.
And we've always...
It wouldn't be getting out of the contract. It would be the opportunity for us next year to... But once I know it's talking about turning it into a revenue center, you know, what are, like, I think my note on that was, you know, how much is projected on those numbers. So when you look at all of those outliers, why not just do it for a year, revisit it next year, I say it might be a 5 minute, hey, let's just go with what
we've always been. I mean, I think both sides have always been cooperative with each other in the fact that something comes up, we both. Yeah. I mean, we've had a 29-year partnership already.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's
I would say keep it.
I guess I like locking in the 300%.
The only way we lock in the 3.5% is a 3-year contract. Is that what we're saying? Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Sure.
I know. I'm asking.
Well, there's always that. So you're always going to have a negotiation occur. And so for their companies, companies have done this in the past, and we've seen it. And I know before we're on the board, when this happened, where a company has come in and say, okay, we see, you know, we have a 10% increase for this year, but, you know, see, guy, who everything moved, can we go more? And so that's the, where we're at is, it's honestly just having a conversation each year, like, there's a change we need to make. The only way, Darla, that we could actually look at any other entities coming in, for example, if it's another district, is we have to add another 10. So that is a math problem. Does that other school have enough buses to pay for that tech?
And I will tell you also, like, we do have our budget with ISD that we have that's the tech I'm hiring for now. But that technician, if I don't have any ISD that I have inside my shop for that person to work on, he works for Monroe Public Schools. And it's not going to be a cost to you. I also have an assistant that works part-time that's not a cost to Monroe Public Schools.
My question was, is the 3.5% of the 3%, whatever it is, is that indicative only if we do a 3-year contract? Is that was
if you did, let's say there was a motion tonight that says move to approve the contract for 1 year, okay? Well, the 1-year rate's been established, and then next year we come back, and yes, there is a risk that they come back and say, okay, hey, we saw a whole lot of stuff move. We're struggling to keep employees.
Yes.
Well, you can lock down at 3.5%. Yes, but then you risk. But by not locking down, you could be risking no.
If CPI is currently sitting at 6% now, and we're offering 3.5%, if this time next year we come and go around the table again and CPI is at 10, then of course we're going to increase our pricing because the cost of things.
So there is no cost increase whatsoever for 3 years.
For 3 years. What you see is what you get, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, 3.5 is a good deal. 3 years.
Yeah.
Current environment.
That's probably the CPI is 10%.
And the other thing, during COVID, it was like 14.
I know.
The other thing, you know, management changes at TransDev and they decide.
She's up.
No.
I think we're good there.
No, I'm good. I mean, at the very top, they change their
business. Well, anybody can terminate, either side can terminate the contract within 60 days. So they really. For whatever reason, they could do it.
They wouldn't offer us if they weren't fine with it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a.
I think
I don't risk someone else coming in higher up that's going to change those numbers.
I think the one variable that we do need to be cognizant of is this: they've created wages to retain their people right now. If one of her techs leaves, she may come to us and say, "We've been trying to find, and your wage and $32 or $35 an hour is not getting that person in the door." And so we had to
I will tell you that I've tried looking. Technicians right now locally are making $41 an hour.
Yeah,
my lead tech right now only makes $29. That's a big difference.
But if you can't get them at the rate you're doing, you don't come back to us. It's already in the contract.
Yep.
You'll have to take it out of whatever it is.
But we're
gonna, my understanding
yes.
correct?
Yep. Yeah. But is if they can't attract talent, we're going to still fill things. I mean, that's still the same thing we have, same scenario.
Are you suggesting that this contract is risking that?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that there are things in the future we just need to be aware of. That's all I'm saying.
And you alluded to getting another tech, if another school system comes on board.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in the works? With
no.
Yeah.
It's always been a conversation because there's other entities out there. When you look at the private the school systems, and you look at Erie Mason and Ida, for example, those are opportunities for us. What we have to look at is kind of what our facility can handle and what it can't. And what can our tax handle. For like an Erie Mason, they have 8 buses, okay, and patients. So we look at the hours, it may be a great situation where we can get another tech and have the vast majority of that cost covered by their system. Okay, and so that's what you look at, is what opportunity to afford that don't stress our system out, but make so that we can keep our cost. Yeah.
I don't want to throw names out there.
No, please don't.
Can our physical space accommodate another tech so that we don't have like a backup in work orders if we were to tech?
So she's looking for a tech right now.
Right.
Okay, and so that answer is yes. We do need, and this is just working with operations of can we move some of their stuff out to create more space. And so that's stuff that we have to do. But again, it's back to like everything is math problem.
There's no projection on adding on. Crossing some things off of this.
So, are there any other questions for Karen? Yeah, we appreciate your years of service with MPS.
Yeah,
we'll call it MPS since we've gone through multiple names.
I know, right? Nobody knows who we are these days.
So we have one real quick question.
Yep. The diagnostic laptop with the software, did we purchase it?
We did, okay. That was it.
Yep.
It actually has not been purchased yet, but it's going to be.
Yeah.
I haven't told you, they extended it and they're billing me the same charge, so it's working right now. So we're just kind of on a hold, and I'm like, money until they knock me out. So it's working right now.
It is working, okay. Yeah, I saw that, and I saw the question mark.
Yeah, the initial cost for the laptop or whatever, I've been working with Dave on that. And then each software gets updated every year, but it's kind of spread out into different months throughout the year. So you won't be able to get out once. Thank you.
All right. Next up to bat is Jackie and Andrew with our PBIS. So they're going to take a moment and kind of go over some of the presentation they had back in June, but then really get into an opportunity for you guys to ask questions. So that's all yours.
Thank you. We really appreciate the opportunity to present this data. Again, we were able to present these numbers to you back in June, and it's really nice to have a refresh of this conversation in preparation for this upcoming school year and to be able to answer any questions you have around the numbers and around our processes moving forward. So, and obviously we want to make sure that Mr. Sabadini is also able to see all this information. So.
I think I was fortunately at the meeting.
Were you? Fantastic.
So
all right.
Good.
Good. All right. So we'll get the whole the band all together.
I just want a minute here. After the last presentation, I know I personally made a request to have a work session so we can dig into the data, we can ask the questions that we want to ask and get the answers.
That's
and that
here.
Never happened. So
no,
we're
that's
doing another presentation.
We're not. They're just going over a couple of things with you and then they're allowing you to ask questions.
So call me that. It said presentation.
Well, hopefully, because you're going to see the same stuff here, that your questions will be all answered.
So we're going to skip through the data just to make sure that we've got a good general overview of what's going on. So we're going to start with our suspension and expulsion data moving through the last 3 years. So from 23-24 to 24-25, we saw a 15.7% reduction in suspension days. So we saved 710.5 suspension days over the course of the entire school year. When we break that down for elementary and secondary, we saw an 18% decrease in secondary for 443 and a 13% reduction in elementary suspension. So we're continuing on this trend that we had from 22-23. We're kind of moving forward that way. So we're really excited to see where those numbers are going. When we look at expulsions were raised from 23-24 to 24-25, raised by 9. They're still under that. Those both numbers together are still under what we had in the 22-23 school year. thought process behind this is really thinking through sweating the small stuff.
Bless you.
When we understand the fact that we see that decrease in suspension numbers, but those larger behaviors are bubbling up to the surface, those still have repercussions, those still have ramifications, and we're still handling those with the severity that's necessary. So we might have seen more of those behaviors last year, and those things are going to happen, but we're not going to change how we handle those. We're going to make sure that we're focusing on the suspension wheels.
So how many of those things we said on the discipline committee, mm-hmm. you know, the discipline board, how many of those were just not brought to the board? Because we know certain circumstances, we asked that question, why did they come to the board sooner? Because their record was clearly indicative of, based on our policy, they should have been brought to the board sooner, mm-hmm. And they weren't. So how many of these decreases are a change in what you brought to us as compared to in the necessity?
So I don't know if I can specifically answer that question with the data we have before us. What I'm comfortable saying is that with this increase in expulsions, we've seen where we understand the need for severe behaviors to come before the board. And when we see this decrease in suspensions, we're understanding how we handle those things differently. How is our reaction? How are we helping to reintegrate students more effectively to make sure that those things aren't repeated and those things are
passed over? I think I want to be clear in your question. Your question, more going from the 27 to 10, is that there are kids sitting in the 17 range that should have been brought to the board that didn't?
There were cases that were brought before us that mm-hmm. we had on more than one occasion said, how come they weren't brought here before? Because if you're following our policy and you're following the discipline process and you're following it, we can look at the power school and we can see all of these incidences that piled up and I know one of the comments we got is, well, you know, we're trying to give them a chance. Well, our policies are our policies. So if our policies aren't being followed, which leads to a change in these numbers, there's a difference there. And so our question was, you know, okay, how come?
Sure. So as we're thinking through how we handle these situations, once again, I can't speak to that specifically. We've not gone through every situation of expulsion and seen why.
It wasn't just one. There was several.
Right, absolutely. And I'm not implying that there was just
one. Now, there was one that was really, I'll use initials. There was one incident that really came to the forefront about this. And this young individual got, golly, I gotta be careful.
You do.
I know, I'm trying. It was in a matter of 2 weeks, this individual had the incident, same incident, four times. And one time is supposed to go before the board for expulsion. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Then it was two, then it was three. It was the fourth time
before
it actually came before the board. I think that's what she's alluding to.
One of the cases that I'm going to.
Yeah, that's the one that sticks in my head.
Okay.
I mean, there's other ones that just seem to disappear.
Sure.
That I knew firsthand there was problems, and it involved violence. It never came before the board. It just went off into Never Never Land.
And that was my comment on your last presentation, if we had a chance to go back and review that information, and that was part of what I was going to ask is, I get you're telling me these numbers are what they are, but what we see is, had those all been reported in the way that they should have been for policy, these numbers probably wouldn't be the same as only coming to us once mm-hmm. and having all these incidences of things.
I would say that I understand exactly what you're saying if we go year from year. If the student who did the same thing four times in let's even say a calendar year, I still have only would have counted as one. So I see your point.
No, there's some that rise up the high on the discipline level.
Right.
One thing because of the severity of the situation.
But maybe they weren't expelled in a previous year. They should have been, but they weren't. I get your point. But if a student had an episode or had a there was a behavior, and it was addressed using the seven factors where we try to mitigate discipline using the state mandate. We try and find other ways to discipline that student, and we do that, and it's still in the calendar year. That student is still going to count as one. So when they do something again and we bring them before you, it doesn't mean the 19 will be 20. It's still going to be 19 for repeated behavior in the same year.
But we used to get cases when I was first on the board, and those cases would just have regular discipline. It was anything over 9 days. So there would be cases where the discipline wasn't an expulsion or whatnot. Now, when we get the cases, there's such a severity level, they seem to all end up there, because when you look at how much of stuff that's went on and the severity of the things, that's just what leads us to there's nothing. So we're missing that whole big gap of 10 days between expulsion that we just don't see anymore. We don't see it anymore.
I would also be interested in the thought process of, because this is just expulsions that have come to fruition. This is not.
Yeah, we skipped over discipline. I would have said that on the previous
So when we think about,
we don't see these suspensions like we did before. Not per se. Like we're going to suspend 30 days, or we're going to suspend 45 days, or we're going to do something like that because you went up the thing,
so
you had to get to the board because it was over 10 days.
That's one of the things that Andrew's actually talking about when he talks about sweating the small stuff, is that what you're actually seeing is kids are just doing the dumb stuff that leads straight to expulsion. Yeah, because we start the small stuff. So the small thing might get you a suspension, but it's curtailing that to the level, that longer time when you guys were seeing them before.
But the discipline process, when you get a suspension, you get another suspension, I mean, it's a progressive.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see the progressive anymore. Like, we don't see, you know, you got 2 days suspension, you got 5 days suspension,
yep.
You got 4 days suspension, you got whatnot, but before, okay, you've hit this level. Now, if you do something else that is in the same category, you're hitting this level, and it was an advancement. Now, it's okay, we got less disciplines, or I mean, we have less suspensions or expulsions. It's because they're being allowed to happen at a bigger rate without coming to us. That's how I see it, and that's how I've seen it for a while.
So what we have before us with Kickboard and our use of more granular data is we're able to, and last year was a beautiful year because we got our first full year of data. And this following year, we're going to have even stronger, fuller data. So we'll be able to have a better understanding of the incidence of those problem behaviors before they get to you, before they become suspensions or expulsions. We'll be able to granularly look at how often these things happen with individual students or grade levels. So we'll be able to answer those questions more effectively.
Right. Some would come to us, and they would have two things, and they would be the severity level, and the other one had 10 before they got there. And I bring it up every single time. I'm like, there is not an equal distribution here. That's why there's a policy that says you have to follow steps. That way everybody's treated the same. But if this person got away with 10 things and before they came to us, and this was two, and they were along the same lines of behaviors, therein lies a problem.
The 10 of the same things you're saying?
It can be a variety of things when you look at the cases. There could be a multiple things, because when they put it in Kickboard, if they don't listen to the teacher, it's insubordination. But if you look at our discipline policy, where insubordination falls, it falls at a higher level than what it's being treated as through the Kickboard and through their process. So what they're doing is not following our discipline process, and it's not straight across the board.
So sometimes some context for, like, why we might see student A has 4 experiences and lands in front of the board, student B has 10 experiences and lands in front of the board, is because they have an IEP.
I'm not talking about those cases. I understand.
But we've had discipline cases where we've had students with IEPs, and that is one of the reasons why it's not 100%. Everybody gets treated exactly the same.
That's not what I'm talking about. Yes, I understand your case.
But if you go back one screen here to suspensions.
One more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think that maybe, because I want to make sure that we're capturing what we're hearing. I think I understand this is that it's a work that we did beginning this year right here, as we brought Dr. McAvoy in, and so we would expect that our suspension rates should decrease because of the low-level items are being addressed by the...
But they were high-level items in there as well, because we call
them low-level. I get it. But I'm saying, though, because you're asking, well, okay, how do we go from, you know, we're seeing, you know, suspension of, you know, 5 days, and all of a sudden they're at 8. Now the next one, they're at business. We weren't seeing, we saw that back here, but now over here, it's, you don't see it as much because you're not, some of those kids' behaviors have shifted. Is that not what you're asking?
Not what I'm asking.
So I'm looking through all of our different policies right now, and there's not, that I see so far, there's not a...
It's in the handbook.
Okay. So that's two different things then. So policy is something that we can do. When it comes to handbook, that's where we hand off responsibility to Andy. Now we can talk to Andy about the handbook, like what the handbook is and what the handbook looks like. But the policy that we oversee, that we set, doesn't have this type of infraction X number of times equals this type of discipline.
So I think if, we're going to have to go forward. So I want to keep you guys to have a question. Is we deal with kids. Not every situation is exactly the same, and so you can't address every single situation with like, okay, he said this to a teacher. He said this to a teacher. And they both get the exact same punishment.
Why not?
Because there's a lot of other history that may have been with this person and not with this person.
I don't share body language.
There's so many variances. And so, and David alluded to it, or said it, is following the statute of seven steps right there. Our goal is to try and change students' behavior so they can function in school. But if we don't, then they're in society.
And that's where we strongly disagree on what is the function of a school system, and it's not to be a social emotional learning environment, of which I don't know where we ever voted on that.
I
don't know where we ever
voted
for that. It's to educate them through an education system and not a behavioral system.
Let's kind of stay on topic.
I just addressing what he brought up.
We've got some really interesting information to talk about the social emotional learning. So we've got that in two slides that I'm going to get out to. But if I can go ahead to referrals. So, and again, I won't read all of this to you. Obviously, you can see the data for yourself. But during the 2024-25 school year, MPS averaged 2.7 referrals per student. 61.2% of our students had zero, and about 12.4% had one referral. And again, those are averages, obviously. But you can see kindergarten through 12th grade, kind of where we sat with referrals across the district. Then if you move ahead to referrals by month, during this time period, our students, our district, averaged 43.4 referrals a day from September until May. And this is always interesting data because, again, you always have a few factors that are contributing. So, obviously, December, you've got less time on the calendar. We have Christmas break. That's going to be a factor. October, you're looking at Halloween. April, you're looking at spring. So there's always a lot of variables and factors that go into it. But this provides us with a nice snapshot of referrals by month, and keeping in mind that referred behaviors are the ones that those behaviors committed to the referral process. That's not just documenting that Johnny did it one time.
I'm curious, with the number on September at 500,
yes.
I would think the September number would be higher. So is that we allow grace in September?
I think it's a combination of grace because we're
Honeymoon. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, nice thing is, we'll sign up this fall. Okay.
Yeah.
In October, we just go. Here you go. Welcome to reality.
Kindergarten. 1,400 referrals. Yeah. I mean, what am I looking at that I'm missing here? Senior?
So, that
educate me. Please educate me.
Yeah. So,
the tolerance level that has changed within the education system. So, when our kids used to snap a pencil, it was the teacher would tell them to chalk it up. In the simple, simple example, that now those kind of things are not implemented.
But let's,
that's all you answer.
Let's explain.
So, so, I mean, obviously, like, when we're looking at our young students, I mean, those students are learning how to do school,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, those behaviors, they look a lot different than they do by 12th grade. We're still learning how to line up safely, learning how to sit in a circle safely, right? So, though it appears shocking to look at those numbers, but those numbers are indicative of our students as they are learning how to be students. And especially when you look at kindergarten specifically, our kids come to us from varying backgrounds. And that's the unique thing about kindergarten, right,
sure.
is that these babies come and some of them have had preschool. Some of them stayed home with grandma. Some of them stayed home with mom, and maybe mom wasn't engaging. Some of them did Head Start. I mean, it's so varied. So when our kindergartners come in, we're not all starting from there.
You can understand my surprise.
Yeah,
you
for sure.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
but when you're at 100%,
there's a lot of this too that's not even being said.
Well, and I think it's important too that
the whole discipline process and starting out at the younger grades and hitting it hard at the young grades so that it
mm-hmm.
what people believe to be behaviors are now in line and they think and they do in the way that.
But that's what we do. If we go back to our rubrics, that's honestly what we started doing in the fall of 23.
I get it. I get it. It doesn't mean that everybody agrees with the process and not everybody agrees with the way.
But our staff does because we gave them a tool so they don't understand that if a child does this, this is what's going to be an outcome of it. And that's why you see the numbers here. And so unless you have teachers going to you going, we don't do this, we don't believe in it, but across the board, and that's why we brought in Dr. McAvoy, and we did that for Rupert work, so we would have consistency with all our buildings. But are you able to dive into that 14-18 number as far as what were those top referral reasons?
Yeah, that was my next question.
The next page. You put on the
yeah.
You're right over here. Well,
yeah. So if you take a look at our elementary, our top referred behaviors by elementary, we've got moderate physical contact, insubordination, and not following directions, and persistent insubordination.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, again, our top referred behaviors, the behaviors that made it to a referral participant that we were documenting.
So when you say referral.
Yes. Office.
Thank you.
Yes. That, so an administrator is expected to take action on it at
mm-hmm.
that point. It's not just for the sake of documentation. You can say, Johnny, you know, I've asked you once, please raise your hand. Johnny, I've asked you twice, now three times, that maybe raising your hand is a poor example.
Yeah,
but, yeah, exactly.
And four, the teacher needs to understand. I totally disagree with this. We know I disagree with this. And
but it's a disciplinary process.
The more that you know, we
it's
don't get
it. Emotional. This is a disciplinary process.
I didn't say it. What have you said?
No, this is a disciplinary process.
It's part of the whole.
What is that? This is a disciplinary process that happens in the classroom. You don't obey what the teachers expect you to do. There's a referral. You go to the principal. And so it's a documentation. What we actually know now is what are our top reasons to get sent to the principal's office.
When you say moderate physical contact, give me, what is moderate physical
contact? Horse play.
Pushing.
So it's something that's escalated a little bit past the horse play.
Horseplay.
We
or play fighting.
A little
beyond.
Beyond.
So play fighting.
Yeah,
like, it could be past that. So if students are tackling a football and one kid thinks that the kid tackled too hard
mm-hmm.
and shoves him to the ground.
Yeah.
Shacks him in the face.
Mm-hmm. We could start out with something that escalated a little bit.
Things like that.
It would not be an example of moderate physical contact. Would not be
you know, the 5-year-old who's swinging their backpack intentionally. So
it would just be annoying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No,
more mentality and soul.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And remember that this is our building level principal. These two aren't doing the discipline.
Right.
They're just the ones working with the teachers, working with everybody, make sure that the work is being done. It's at the building level between the deans.
Thank you for your questions.
So, it's really nice to be able to break it down this way, starting with the larger things and moving more granularly so we can understand what's happening before these become referrals, before they become suspensions, before they become expulsions. How can we break this down into the most finer details? So 7% of all of our negative behaviors last year, before they were referrals, these are just things that were entered in, were major behaviors. So just 7% of things were considered those major behaviors. And just like Jackie said, I'm not going to read everything off, but persistent insubordination was our leading candidate amongst all grade levels in those major behaviors. So consistent, persistent insubordination. Those are the things that most likely led to a major behavior being documented and kicked forward. When we look at minor behaviors, these are smaller level behaviors that are handled in the classroom, that once again may or may not have led to a referral. Jackie went over what behaviors have actually led to referrals. But these are the granular behaviors that are handled in our classrooms most often as far as minor behaviors are concerned.
Okay. So,
yes.
You have a range of teachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some teachers may look at behaviors a little differently.
Yeah, it's gonna be handled differently per classroom, right? So that, not the entire disciplinary process, but just how they handle things is according to their classroom culture and their classroom procedure. So how those things are handled is very much based on how the teacher understands their culture and how they operate in a classroom. So their autonomy leads to them being able to handle that familial relationship with their kids, for sure.
Also, content area.
I think
it's absolutely. Mm-hmm. In gym PE classes, yelling is a common thing that happens in there. But if they were to do that in their ELA class, totally different response. So I feel like there's a lot of variables at play, right? Activity are they doing in their ELA class? Because if they're getting into debate, like if they're discussing debate in class and they're practicing debate, yelling during a debate is different than yelling because you're angry at somebody. So a lot of like nuance and things that also goes into this.
But yeah. We've also seen in the Badger where there's a student that ends up with a whole bunch in power school. And it's from one teacher, although they've been in school all day.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have, you know, it's not like they're in trouble in every class with
right.
every teacher. It's that teacher is annoyed by whatever that student's doing. And therefore,
mm-hmm.
that teacher and that student has a relationship problem
mm-hmm.
that leads to the student getting referrals all the time.
Absolutely.
And I have an issue with that because why isn't the teacher taking responsibility.
I'm really glad you brought that up, and this is kind of once again the power of all this data is regularly throughout the buildings. Jackie and I will help do data studies around kickboard data. Each
mm-hmm.
individual teacher pulls their own behavior data, pulls what students they're seeing the most negative behaviors out of, the most positive behaviors out of, and kind of just do the kids that they're not giving too much of, and then they can make action plans around. What should I do with my relationship with this kid? Am I seeing more negatives because they're actually having these more negatives, or is there something different going on? So they can really take some time that's allotted in their contract anyway, so be able to have these data discussions and really think through what does this mean? Is it that I'm just super hard and I'm riding this kid and I've really got to really understand, like, wait a minute, I've got to pump the brakes on this. Or is there a different behavior conversation that needs to happen as far as maybe they need IEP services? Or is there something I'm just straight up missing? And being able to have that conversation has been really effective. We've seen lots of conversations with teachers who've used the tool more effectively or have been able to use the tool to make data decisions about their classrooms more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to, once again, be granular about this is where we see some of those real strong decisions made.
I was going to say, I think, and that's why some of the structures that are put in place are so powerful in the buildings, because Jared was my student, and I had all different kinds of problems with Jared. And I think maybe the problem was me, because in some of those data studies, when we're talking about Jared, none of his teachers had problems with Jared. I had problems with Jared. So I think it does lead to further discussion, and that's why we track this data and why we know that Mr. D is, like, he's the problem. He's responsible for, you know, maybe 80% of the referrals in that grade. Now, are we using that against Mr. D? No, we're going to work with Mr. D. So maybe it is, to your point. Maybe it is a teacher problem.
And in even further out.
When it comes to us, it's irrelevant. We can't look at that. We just what's presented before us, regardless of the source of the data that's presented to us, although we can visibly see when you go through their record that it's consistently the same teacher that's having the issue.
What's also nice about, and to piggyback off what David was saying, is that from this data, we can also help them make decisions around, do I need restorative conversations with the student? Can I bring in my restorative practice coordinator to make that conversation better? We've actually, there's one anecdotal observation around a bus driver who had that happen. They were really struggling with a couple of students, and they had a restorative conversation with them and did not realize that X, Y, and Z were happening. And in those conversations, the students were able to tell that bus driver, this is what we're going through, and we understand that our behavior is unacceptable, but we're struggling with this. So they weren't just slapped on the wrist. They were given consequences, but they were also able to reconstruct their relationship based on this data.
How many school districts within our county use Kickboard, to your knowledge?
I don't know for sure.
How many people in the state are doing?
We can find you some sort of comparable data.
I would say there's a small percentage in the state that are actually doing
level
of intervention on behavior.
And we're thinking, we have meetings in other districts where this also is like five or six or seven different programs that's able to do what we're able to do with PowerSchool.
But you got to remember, though, every to PBIS. So schools do PBIS. It's all about how they collect their data.
Right.
So we use Kickboard to collect our data. With other schools, I'm trying to remember the
before that we use
Swiss.
Not Canadian Michigan, what you're saying.
Yeah. It's a major system in Michigan, but as far as the collecting of data, I was trying to remember what the old system was.
Swiss
was the data collection tool. Okay. And so that was probably
and kind of the PNT. And then various schools are also using various other methods.
With the new cell phone policy, how is your reporting going to change?
Absolutely. We're very excited.
Here we go.
We're incredibly excited for what that looks like. So we are eager to share that data back with you once we collect some.
So the purple line says secondary. Is that secondary meaning?
7th through 12th.
Is what?
7th grade through 12th grade.
7th through 12th grade. And number one was cell phone under minor. That's because I just ran a thing on that. Mm-hmm. We had 943 incidences. And then you do the math over cell phone users, and it was like less than 0.5% was the potential for infractions, but then related to actual infractions. So I when I saw that, I was very surprised that I saw that, because how many cell phone users are there in 7th to 12th grade?
We could pull.
There's a lot.
Yeah,
I only get 1,500 in to get less than 0.5%.
Yeah.
But and I only use 1,500 as the number. So, you know, when I see something like that, it just makes me wonder, like, you know, are we talking about a click of a number, or are we talking about a percentage of the population?
We can pull both of those numbers. Right now, this is the most. So if one student had 15,000 cell phone entries recorded, and the next one had like 3, that would be it. But this is general over, like, we could pull how many students and how many behaviors, but this is specifically behaviors.
Misleading in class.
Second, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I appreciate, too, Darla, what you said about, you know, the deep work that's being done here and in the limited capacity that may be happening across the state. I I appreciate that. I think you're probably very right about that. I know that when our bus drivers went out of district, I believe, for some training.
Mm-hmm. Went to Wayne County.
In Wayne County, yes. They were, that was something that they had. They were like, we are leaps and bounds.
So then the remaining about 32-31.8% of behaviors are from our peer-to-peer rubrics. So we break down our peer-to-peer mistreatment data into four different levels based on level zero being things that are handled specifically in the classroom that we don't refer those things. Those are just like mild level, like somebody called me a poopy head and we don't do that here. Down to level four behaviors, which are more severe behaviors. We call that fighting, like things like fighting or making really specific verbal threats or really prejudicial comments. So we see that the vast majority were in level zero. Level three is our second highest, and we see that probably for our moderate physical contact. That's a level three behavior. So we see that that's something that we need to work on. So we think about how we can rope in our restorative practice coordinators to make sure that those relationship building skills and that students are able to actually handle situations the correct way or reach out for help and responding to those the correct way. So
are those levels listed? Like what is a level 0, 1, 2, 3?
Those are on our rubrics.
Those are on our rubrics. Mm-hmm. And we can make sure that you have access to them.
Just curious.
Yeah. For sure. So my example for like level four would be fighting. Fighting is an absolute level four behavior. Level
two. Where would that fall? Like would that be board intervention to?
So all of the peer to peer mistreatment behaviors also correspond exactly to a behavior in the code of conduct. So the reason we break them down like this is to be able to more effectively handle.
But there weren't 1,389 incidents of fighting that
came. It's not. I'm sorry.
That was
just an example of that.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, okay. That's a higher level, mm-hmm. and that would be something that, according to the, would come to the board.
Not specifically. Not in every.
So that would be less. Fighting could be less than 9 days suspended.
And I do want to say, too, that brings up a very good point, and it kind of goes along with what Andy said, and he said, like, not famous last words, but this may haunt me. But there are, you may see an offense, and they are vastly different. And I will knock on my previous school district. There was a fight, and I might consult student services, and the first question was it a fight or was it a Sylvania fight? Like a Sylvania fight. Like a bunch of boys trying to be tough and are they punching? Right? Gary knows what I'm talking about.
Or
are
kicking.
They?
How do you know?
Because it does matter when, and I know we look at a crime, an offense, a violation, and we see that in black and white, but it is very much gray when it comes down to the circumstances, the severity, was it, like, how bad was it? Like, we need to know, and that's where our administrators do use their discretion in those factors when they assign consequences. So you might see so many level fours, and they might be level fours for whatever reason, but not all level fours are created equal. Not everything labeled assault is created equal.
Assault?
Assault is in the code of conduct. Assault.
According to the discipline policy, an assault is an automatic level. It doesn't grade itself up. Assault's a crime. And so you're suggesting that an assault that is a crime, by your own definition, would not meet. I mean, assault, you use the word.
But there are assaults that are, I mean.
You used it.
An assault is a defenseless victim. I mean, that's how I look at it versus, you know, a fight, mutual combatant. You know, it's tough making those decisions.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a great example. Like when I think about an instance a couple years ago with a fight, you have a student fight that is mutual aggression, and you have a student fight that escalates to an assault on a staff member.
Yep.
Staff members intervening. So it, on paper, it looks like quite a fight, but essentially it can be really.
Well, some of those fights are just downright assaults on another student.
Mm-hmm. It can, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, absolutely can be. Yeah.
90% of them are just false provided. You know, my friends are there, so I have to act tough. I'm too scared to actually fight, but I'm going to act tough. Just false bravado.
Seeing some of that.
So when we think around those peer-to-peer behaviors and what some of our most recorded district-wide peer-to-peer behaviors are. So we see better physical contact at level 3 being our top one district-wide. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the vast majority of those moderate physical contacts are in the lower elementary. So you think about your kindergarten, your first grade, your second grade. That's a high level of what those things are. And when you compare that to what moderate physical contact would be for an 11th grader, those things are not entirely apples to apples. When we think about secondary behaviors, that's when you see your lower level behaviors. You see goofing around, making rude remarks, making rude gestures. Those level 0, level 1 behaviors that are handled, like, hey, we don't do that here, knock it off. Knock it off and carry on. So we see far fewer peer-to-peer behaviors documented in the secondary level than we do in the elementary, and that's showing kind of where we're at as far as developmentally appropriate behaviors within school. What are we trying to focus on in how we handle discipline? So that's where our peer-to-peer behaviors, if we break them down like that. The other nice thing about this, and I won't really belabor this point too much, but we're with the advent of the 5-6 building, this allows us to really understand what we can plan for as far as behavior in the 5-6 building with our 4th and 5th grade data across the district. So when we think about positive, we have 207.8 average positives per student. So we can break that down into what are the specifics that our students are good at. What can we make sure that we're pumping up, that we can celebrate, that we can build on? So if we're looking at them following directions while being respectful and either participating in class or having an appropriate voice level, we've got some really cool things that we can work through. We've got some really nice things that we can pump up and start with our PBIS goals to start the year. We can hit the ground running. So we're not trying to collect a group of 2 grades without an understanding of who they are. But when we think about that, we also want to think about what are some of the things we need to work through. So a lot of them do well with following directions, a lot of them don't. So we need to work on insubordination, and that helps us with the underlying goal. Moderate physical contact is the thing we need to think about. Harassment, disrespect. These are things that we do need to think through. But going through our referrals, about 70% of our students have 1 referral or less. So we know who we need to target and how we can do that so we can get, once again, more granular so we can help these kids as they move forward.
It's going to be interesting to see statistically how the 4th grade referrals change now that they're at the top of food chain in the school.
Yep. It's so
interesting. Top of food chain is great.
So, well, you got one, don't you? It's 6:43. We want to give about 7 more minutes. So if you look at the whole part, if you got questions of Jackie and Andrew, please ask them.
Excellent.
You know, so they give you the answers right here. If you've got this document question, many of you've seen this before. So there's about 7 minutes left before we need to kind of wrap this up. So if you've got questions, pop them up. This is a chance to listen to this.
I don't ever remember. I know that we've passed PBIS but for social emotional learning, I don't ever recall that coming across our plate as to does the school want to take and teach that kind of a system. And so when you all brought it up in this, I mean, you could see it coming, but you didn't actually label it until we got this in June. And that was the first time that it came out that the school is now taking the approach of social-emotional learning. which is a whole context of its own. I mean, the whole nation can be divided on this topic alone in a lot of instances on how people feel where the education system lays and on social emotional learning. So when it came up in June, my first thing was, hey, we need to talk about this. Like, how did this come here? We didn't vote on it. You know, what is it? And so I have the same questions I have now. When did the school decide it was going to take on the social emotional learning, which is not your PBIS system?
Can I,
as you just indicated, they're separate.
Honestly, when I went to Monroe Middle School, there was a countywide group, and it was called the MTSS group.
Yes.
And we started.
That was started in Mason in 2003.
So early 2000s, and it just kind of evolved. It was RTI, then it was response to intervention, and now it's PBIS. I mean, it just changed, but that type of learning has been around so much. And I think that since 2020 with COVID, I think that it really did percolate with that. Kids had no really good social graces, for the lack of a better way of saying it.
Well, not all systems shut down. Not all schools shut down for all those years.
Darla,
I mean,
just saying.
We just have to be specific to where we're at on this.
When you think about like social emotional learning, it can be in a very broad context. Like there is curriculum around like trails that focuses on the castle competition.
And we do that.
Right, we do that. And then in other scenarios, you are using in the moment strategies where you are helping students resolve conflict.
Like
a
5-second intervention.
Yeah, exactly. So when we talk about this, please don't assume it's always like a packaged curriculum so much as though it is an approach, to addressing those castle competencies. And if you look into some of that, then you have like a wealth of information out there on the impact. And
But there also is a lot of information out there on the negative impact it can have on students in long-term life. So there's two sides to everything, and there is two sides to social-emotional learning. And so when it got highlighted, I get it. You know, Cindy says and Carrie says, well, we've always done this. But there can be a point where the school system can decide, look, we want to focus all this time and energy on the core teaching of education that's supposed to be. And we had talked about one of the other things that we talked about was the amount of time that's spent on this. It's you're going out here for 15 minutes, you're going over here for half an hour, you're going over here for an hour, you're doing this for an hour. And so the day keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking on the amount of time that's actually spent on what the public thinks we're doing is teaching their children. And behaviors, just look at the amount of time we spend on this as compared to we spend on academics. Academics, we get a quick run through. We're lucky if we get a couple questions, you know, and we've already had this one twice.
I would say this, Darla, about the SEL or social emotional learning. I think it dovetails with what has happened in the workforce when we call it emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've spent a lot of time training managers on, supervisors on. And if you look at the scoring on that, it's most people gravitate toward leaders that have emotional intelligence. So I'm not saying these two things work hand in hand or they have to. I'm just saying that I think this is something that's not only happening at school level, it's happening at
we understand that. I'm just saying that we make it sound like every school in the nation is doing this. Every state in the nation is taking on the preface that Michigan has, and that's not the case. That is not the case. I mean, we operate within a state, but not the entire nation is taking on this kind of thing.
Well, the CDC is the person that endorsed it.
I don't agree.
Well, yeah. So actually, and I would say if we're not doing something about social emotional, we're going to lose instructional time because that's why this is put in place.
gain back that instructional time with students.
The more
so I get it, I stand alone on my opinion.
The problem is, the more discussion you have,
what word does this or this listen? On the cell phone in particular,
yeah.
I think I've said this twice. This will be the third time I'll say it, and I'll tap out on the third time. So I know we're going to do a lot of grace in September with the cell phone, but I think I've asked, can we please act as though the system is in place so we record the information so we know how we're tracking over time? And I've heard every time we're going to do that, so...
Yep.
I'm going to hold you to the fact that we're going to do it.
And that, they've heard this. The building principals have all heard of that.
Yeah.
Good.
Because if I see no data for the first few months, I'm going to say we had no incidents.
Right. I think it's important to do that, right?
Despite who I will. Because a reported incident is an incident that's not recorded. Right?
Personally, I'd like the opportunity to come back with another time and start with the FDL.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Really
dedicate that so I can understand more what Darla's saying. I can understand more what Carrie's saying and what you guys are saying.
That'd be great.
Is that a fair request?
Yeah.
We'd love to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I also don't think it's fair to target Andrew and Jackie by saying this was never brought to us. You know,
this is a true statement.
Pre their positions.
Yeah.
So it would be more of administrators.
So I'm in the room with the administrative staff. I'm in the room with the superintendent. I'm in the school board, and I'm in the room with Andrew and Jackie. So I don't believe my comments were directed at them specifically. My direct comments were directed that we as a board did not vote on this. I know I didn't vote on this because had it come up, I would have addressed it when it came up. So I didn't.
To your point, I'm not sure when the Monroe Public School Board of Education ever took action.
We voted PBIS and the doctor in.
No, she was not PBIS.
PBIS
had
been
around for
what
she was just a rumor. She was a
Dr. McAvoy.
Yeah. What year was that?
That was a part of RTI.
She came in to help create the help us with a system so that we could have consistency amongst all of our grade levels.
I discovered it.
On this one, inside the classroom and outside the classroom.
You invented it.
That was her test.
I truly supported it.
She came in after the
I was just trying to be funny. It's never a problem for you, Cindy. Thank you.
I did respond to you, Cindy. I know.
So, with that being said, can I get a motion to adjourn the New York session?
Yeah, a motion to adjourn the New York
session. Okay, that concludes our agenda. Monroe Public Schools Board of Education. This session for Tuesday, August 26, 2025 is adjourned from the time of 6:53.